So thank you so much for coming and listening to me. But you all know that Buddhism is more about pragmatic, practical. That means what you learn that you can apply in your life, that's Buddhism. It's not something that we just pray and hope to get from somewhere. So I don't want to use any fancy language or anything. Just go straight to the point that we hopefully you already learned something from this. Today we have like let me watch out so I can watch my time. Sorry. We're going to talk a little bit about the Four Noble Truths. And the keys about that is the first time the Buddha turned the Dharma wheels, he talked about that. And why? Because it's so important that you remember when he first enlightened on his way back to find the four friends that he started with, and he met with another monk on the opposite way coming. And when that monk saw the Buddha, and the Buddha saw that monk, and the reason is because that monk have a surprise. It took him kind of a surprise because most of the yogis at the time, they supposed to look dirty. You know, all the clothing, all dirty clothing, and because you practice you have to starve, you have to go through a lot of hardship in order to achieve enlightenment. In this case, Buddhas looked handsome. You know, clean, everything looks clean and beautiful. And that monk sort of, what's going on here? What kind of monk? He is. So then Buddha stopped and bowed to him, and then he bowed back, and then they exchanged some words, and Buddha said, I just got enlightened. And the others looked at him, okay, congratulations. And then turn his back around, and then kept going. And the Buddha suddenly realized that, oh, did I say something wrong here? Why this monk didn't believe me? I can look at his eyes and it seemed like he didn't believe me at all. And at that time, Buddha realized that even he was in Nirvana, but he couldn't talk about Nirvana at all. Why? Most of the people that he talked to, they never been there in Nirvana, so they might not believe him. So on his way, he thought about something that people had been through, which is what? The first one of the Noble Truth is suffering or ill being. Because it's easier to understand the ill being, that means it's the opposite, it's a well being. Right? And it's easier for us to say ill being, that means we in the present and we're not well. We're not enjoying the present. So the first one is suffering or ill being. And the second, the Buddha talk about the making of the suffering or the ill being. So I assume that you all know about that. You might say that because of ignorance, of the hatred, of the aversion, something like that, that's the making of ill being or suffering. My main point here is when you go to the third point, which is the cessation of the ill being, and then the last one is the path leading to the well-being or to the end of the cessation of ill being, then we can see what's the first one after the path that Buddha talked about. That's the Eightfold Noble Path. Eightfold Path, right? And the first one is the right view. It's hard to understand when we talk about right view. What does that mean to you? Right view. Right opinions, right thinking, right ideas. The right view in this case is something equal to wisdom. And the wisdom is got to come from somewhere deep down inside, so we can understand, so we can see things clearly, like we learn from the Bible, so we can see things as is. Because most of the time when you see things, we tend to see it through our lenses, our glasses. That's mean our bias, by our knowledge, our experiences, so we don't see things as is. So right view require that if you look at the Noble Eightfold Path, you can see the right view. In order to have the right view, you need to have the right concentration. That's meditation is about. Meditation help you to have a right concentration, right? And from right concentration, then you can see the right view. You can look at the things and say, ah, I got it now. But before you get into the right concentration, you have to have right mindfulness. That's another one. So I don't know about your traditions, but our traditions, we put a lot emphasis is on the mindfulness, because mindfulness is not something, because a lot of people get mixed up mindfulness with the bare attention. So some describe mindfulness differently, but it's more like personal experience. If you experience when you meditate, when you try to be mindful, you will see that you don't want to put any thought, any biases, any knowledge, anything into what you see during the time that you sit, that being mindful. And if you have mindful, and then you're able to keep that mindful steady, that's when you have concentration. Now remember, another problem with mindfulness is because everything here is impermanent, influenced by impermanence, including mindfulness. Remember that. Uh-oh. So that's why you have a hard time keeping things together. So don't blame yourself, because that's the nature of things. It's just like when you see the high-speed light rail, you see right there? How they keep the light rail, I mean, it's a 300 or 400 mile per hour, right? And then there's a cushion between the light rail, right? So somehow the rays and the rail somehow maintain a stable distance. So the light rail travel in very fast speed, but it's maintained very stable. It's very stable. So the same thing when you meditate. The first thing you be mindful, and you also be mindful that everything is impermanent. So sometimes your mind might go here and there. That's fine. But at first you need to understand that part, so you don't get upset. Because sometimes you sit for a while, and then you don't get anything, and you feel very upset. You feel like, I'm not Zen materials. Just like, so that's when you feel discouraged. And then when you feel that, then sometimes you might give up. Or you feel like, I'm going to find something else. So if in your first trial, don't feel bad about it, because even us, we've been practicing this for that long. Still, you're going to experience sometime a good day and sometime a bad day, because that's the nature of everything impermanent. If you want every day is a good day, that's not normal. Right? And that's why we have to accept that. We have to accept, okay, I learned something today, and that's the nature of our world. We live in the world that's always ever changing. Every single second is never the same. It looks the same, but it's never the same. So we have to have the right view about that things, everything around us. So, talking about right view, when you have the right concentration and you're able to see things clearly, then that Buddha talked about, in the Bible, in the discourse called Three Dharma Shield, the Buddha talked about three important points, but I don't know if I have enough time to explain the whole thing here, because it's so difficult to understand, to grasp this three elements of Buddhism, and it's very important, because these are the three doors that lead to liberation. The first one is the, and I think maybe you all know about this, is the Buddha talked about emptiness. Right? So what does that mean to you when people say emptiness? Nothingness? No. I mean, similar, whatever word you want to use for it. But emptiness means when you look at the flower, when you look at everything around here, including us, we are not made by human material. Is that true? The same thing for flower. If you look at the flowers, or even the wood, this wood not made by wood materials. So that means they're non-substantial. There are no clear. When you say this is a watch, this is a flower, this is a human being, but when you look deeply into this, we see that You cannot call this one as human. You cannot call the arm as human. You cannot see call the head as human. The human being is the whole thing. The same thing for the flower, the same thing for the wood, for the watch, everything. So all of those non-human materials come together and become a human. Right? And that means we don't have a substantial. Something that we can say, that you can call self. There are no self-own. Or shall something that you can call that this come from this. Like you can take the paper and say this paper come from the paper shell. There's no such thing like paper cell or even self, the flower cell or human cell, because we all of those things. Come from those non-elements of that particular things, like human being, right? We some people call us is we have something from the outer space, right? Some of the elements coming from the outer space inside us is in here. And that's why we cannot call this as a there's some foundation, something that you can grasp, something that you can say this is the ingredient that makes this. You cannot say that. You look everything around you and you find, yeah, there's no such thing like that, including us, flower, wood, the cup, the water, everything. Nothing like that. So that's one of the thing, that's why we say the emptiness, because in there are no true substantial that we can grasp and say, this is it. We say sometimes that DNA is our live element or something, right? Living our essential elements, but that's not true. The second one is the this one is the they call the silentness. S-I-N-G L-E-S-S-N-E-S-S, silentness, or no formation. The reason we talk about that, because the when you talk about formations, the same thing. If you look around you, everything, when you see the cup or the watch, this is not the true thing. It's just made up of a lot of things. So when you talk about something truly, there are no such things truly. Because when you say sightlessness, that means the sight tell you this is it. This is the one I see. But it turned out that because what you see doesn't mean it is exactly what you see. It's something else. It's more than that. So, because the condition, when conditions comes together, you see that. The same thing when you see a flower. I mean the cloud. The cloud, when you look at the sky, you see the cloud. And then sometime later, the cloud's no longer there. What the cloud turned into? Rain. After the cloud turned into rains, And then after a while, the rain turned into what? River. Creeks, rivers. And then the river turned into what?
Ocean.
Ocean turned into what? Cloud again. You see, right now, it just go, is there no formation? It just formed something there, and then it turned around and becomes something else. But you see there, the cloud never dies. The only transformed from one thing to the others. But it's never dying. You see right there? You can see? Because we don't see it. And we thought, oh, the cloud gone. But if you look deeply, you can see, oh, no. The cloud might become snow. The cloud might become the water in this cup. And that's how we need to see things surround us that way, because nothing actually gone. That's why Buddha talk about there's a no beginning and there are no ends, right? Right? When you look at deeply, you can say, wow, that's clearly explained to us. The same way happened to us. We never die. We are immortal. You know that? How come? You see, when you look at yourself, you see your what? Your ancestor, your parents, your daddy, your mommy. And then after you, you see the others, like your son, your daughters. And then after that, it keeps going. Even you, our body. Our body turn into something. I remember the in the funeral, in the Christian tradition, they say some dirt, go back to dirt, right? Die? That's the way they start, yeah? Ashes go to ashes, yeah? The same thing. But then we are ashes. And then we go back to ash. And then we turn into human, and then we turn back into ash. That's the nature of things around us. Everything like that is never dying. It's turned into something else. It's transformed. It's not really go away forever. So it's I know it's hard to contemplate that something that's never there, and then suddenly you hear our talk today is about something always there. And the last one is the aimlessness. That means something we call no expectation. Because most of the time, we feel like when you do the act of giving, or when you do the act of whatever acts you do, you feel like there's an actor and there's a receiver, right? Whatever we do something, when we bow to the Buddha, you think the Buddha is the person that you bow to, right? And then you might say, the Buddha is the bow, how you use the term, the receiver, and we are the giver. But when you look deeply, there are no such thing. Why? Because inside you have what? You're bowing to who? So the receiver and the bower, the same thing. And that's why when you talk about, I chat early on with the Kokyo about the concept of no mai, Soto Zen. The reason it's no mai because everything, because of our analytical minds, we tend to see things, this is otherness, and this is me, I and others. When you see I and others, then you see two different entities. But in fact, we all have the same Buddha nature, right? So when you say I and others, that means I have the Buddha nature and you don't have it? Or what? No. We all have it. The only thing is, are we enlightened enough to see it? And that's why when Buddha talk about the no expectation, the endlessness, that means when you see things, it's there are no such thing like the giver and the receiver. Because we all the same. We all in there. And when you have that kind of mind, we tend to suffer a lot. Go back to the beginning of the Four Noble Truths. When you see things like that cloud, and there are no more cloud, there's a sunset, and then there are no more sunset, you feel sad, right? But there's no such thing like that. It's all around and it's come back. It's in that, you know, kind of a samsara, you know, the cycle of life. It keeps going and back. The only thing right now you need to understand is when you see that, you don't get stuck to that. You don't get hooked up by that. You feel like, wow, now I can tell. I can tell. Whatever, even in the present moment, is no longer present. A second ago, right? It's still impermanent. It's everything moving, everything changing. You keep going, and then we want things stand still. But, and that's how we suffer. No, I have a good day today. I want this to last forever. No. Sorry. Right? So that's why when you understand the concept of the suffering, that's when we try to hold on to something that's impossible. No way that you can hold on to anything around you. And we have to understand, come to that point, understand that. Then you will feel like, wow, now I got it, now I'm free. I don't get stuck to anything. I'm like a free bird, I can fly anywhere I want. Because everything around me, I enjoyed it whenever I'm there, I enjoyed it. And then because I know it, sooner or later, it's going to go away. Because it's going to turn into something else. And if you have that kind of right view, the right eyes, the Buddha eyes, then we might be able to find some freedom somewhere. We have that. Absolutely. Do we have wisdom in us? Yes. Yes, absolutely. How come? We understand, right? When we see something suffering, something that make us feel uncomfortable, suffering, or not well, we know how to stop it, how to let it go. But the problem is, we let go one thing and then we hold on to the others. We keep doing it that way, and that's why we keep having hard times getting us out of this samsara cycle of life. So maybe I know it's a subject only 40-45 minutes, And I already give you some headaches already. it's complicated. So hopefully, you from now on you have some thinking about this and then maybe you might find your freedom soon. I don't know how, but that's your problem. So now come to the question. I like question because I mean I feel like we interact, and then hopefully if some question is quite good, and I learned a lot from questions. Some people ask me some question and I feel wow, it just opened my eyes up from that question. So hopefully, so we're okay to go on with the question because now the time. So you have any questions?
Yeah.
Thanks. Endlessness. M A I M L E S S N E S S. Or no expectation.
So you call those three things the gateways to liberation?
Yeah, three doors to liberation. So
how would we practice, say, with signlessness?
The same thing.
How could we enter that door?
The same thing when we talk about no mind. What does that mean, no mind to you?
Well, we might just stop our fixed ideas about something.
The thing is, because when you talk no mind, because whenever you got to see this, whenever something appears, you need to have the subject and you have the object. Right? If you see things like that, this is an object, and I am the subject, then there's a mind. Right? When you don't see it, even you look at that, but you don't see there's an object, there's a subject, then nothing to talk about. Right? Because that applies to everything, including your feelings, your emotions, your suffering, your illness, your wellness, including everything. That's the philosophy of no mind. No mind, that means you don't see there's an object and you are the subject. That's not the same thing like there's no receiver and then the bower. Because there's no mind. No Buddha. Because Buddha right here. Whenever you see things as a two dimension, is that the right way to say it?
Duality.
Two realities?
Duality.
Duality. Then you will see that there's one end and the other end. And when you see that, always, you gotta have, in order to have something to think about, you need to have something in order to think about. Yes. Is that?
Yes.
Thank you.
So if someone came to your temple and to maybe meditate with you, or what kind of instruction would you give them once you get by the posture, you know, of sitting, however you sit, for your concentration?
I followed the Mahayana, the you say great vehicles. I don't know about that. but at that time, I wasn't allowed to study anything about Theravada, the we call Vinayana, the smaller vehicles. I didn't learn anything from that until later. So later, when I study a lot about the tradition, our traditions, meditations with the no mind, and we also have another Zen master from China. We studied that a lot, and we have a lot of koan, K-O-A-N, right? We can learn that a lot too. But to me, it's so hard for me to understand. When I was pretty young, I became a monk when I was 11 years old. I have no idea why until later. So when I studied the Vinayana, the smaller vehicles, I looked it up and I saw something more concrete, more instructive, like Vipassana. You know, insight meditation, that's what they call. It's very clear, you contemplate about your body. I learned that from my tradition too, but there are no such clear instruction in our tradition. You say contemplate about your body, your feelings, your mind, and the mind object, and that's it. And more about suffering, more about impermanence, more about non-self, and I feel, wow, how you understand non-self? So hard to understand at that young age. I have no idea. And when you meditate, you have to contemplate on that thing. And I have no idea until later when I studied the Theravadan tradition, and I go deeper into the Vipassana, and then when I try to combine those things together and say, wow, it's right here, it's right there, and that's how we try at our temple. I know we different, but I like to show my student more about the Vipassana way of meditation. Because that it's easier for them to follow, easier for them to catch up, to understand step by step. Because I mean, they're very clear, they're very good with the instruction. So that's what I'm trying. But at the same time, our side Mahayana, we have the view I just talked to you about. That's wonderful, but they don't talk much in Theravadan tradition. They don't talk about that much. Interesting. And I feel, well, wow, why not? We should combine somehow, some way. So do I answer your question? Yeah.
When Patrick asked about the gate of no mind and your response, I was thinking maybe it's kind of advanced practice, I think, maybe to experience the world without the subject object, but another gate. Do you also recommend, it seems like if we keep noticing what our mind is doing, that maybe eventually we learn more about it and not so fixed. But maybe the door to not having all those fixed ideas is to recognize them constantly.
Yeah, that's why that's easier when we first start meditating. That's a good way to go, because you know, when you say we use the no mind thing, it's so hard to contemplate. Well, how are we going to do that? You got to have something. Even you say the right mindfulness and then right concentration, and then suddenly you say no mind, and you say, what? I don't understand it. That's why the right concentration go, and the last one is the right view. The right view is our wisdom. That's the ultimate goals. But we need to start somewhere, right? And it's understandable. Don't try to don't try to run when you are unable to walk yet. Right? You need to take step by step, the same way the Buddha, he went through that when he went up to the Himalaya, and then he started with the different teachers there, and then finally he also achieved step by step, and then finally he went down the mountain, he got that enlightenment. So it's our world. Our structures like that. We need to have something, but then the problem is because when you try to meditate and then at first we struggle and then gradually we get better and better, and then we come to a point. If you come to the point that if you got it into something, you're stuck right there because with that thing it's impermanent. It keeps changing. And then meanwhile you then say, why don't you stay still for me, please? No. They're not gonna stay still for you. They're gonna move, because it's impermanent. And that's why we have a hard time feeling sort of discouraged. We feel like the Buddha let you down or something. That's why can't I get it? But that's the point. When you come to the point that I experienced the same way. I got stuck and then I felt really bad about that. And then, you know, sometime with this understanding, I gradually see things a little bit differently. Now remember, those three doors, you can use it, you know, depends on your circumstances. Like you just lost a dear one, right? And when you contemplate on the sightlessness, you don't feel that person gone forever. You see right there? Because the cloud there, it turned to the water, the rain, and then the rain become the creek become the river ocean turn to the cloud. Your loved one never gone away. They're still around you. So you feel, different way of seeing things that will heal our suffering, make us feel better. So don't try, because the Buddha show you different way of looking at things. And depends on our circumstances. Where you get stuck at, then you can sort of like our tool. You have a tool back. That's our, methods here, right? You take it out. Okay, this tool not working. I'm going to change the other tool. You're not tool for this, much better than the other tool. Same way. And that's why if you study Buddhism with an open mind, you will learn, you will see further. You never know. If you're different tradition, they might have different things. But if you, of course, you need to practice as well, because that's the key I told you early into that talk, that we need to understand Buddhism is more about pragmatism, about practice. If you don't practice, you never understand it. You need to do it in order to understand it, because it's all about doing, so you can experience it. Otherwise, there's no way that I can explain to you. Like the same way we used to talk about when you go to the ocean. Let's say you go to the ocean, or you go to the mountain view. You go up high in the mountain, and you see on the other side the beautiful view, and then the person on the other side of the mountain asks you, hey, oh wow, wow, it's so beautiful up here. And the person say, can you describe the other side for me? Can you do that? Can you do that to the other side, the person at the bottom of the mountain? No. Even you try your best, that person cannot understand what you're talking about. Why it's so beautiful. And that's why you gotta go up there and see it for yourself. we cannot describe to you. But that's why we need to practice. Practice makes us better. Just like we need to clean the house. You gotta clean the house every day. Right? Same thing. You need to go to the gym and exercise every day. Same thing. You need to practice. And when the more you practice, you become better, you understand more, you get to the point that you're able to see things differently. It is hard to describe. I mean, and that's why hopefully I answer your questions. So we have like one or two more minutes.
What are the different Buddhist practice tools that you've learned, used along the way in your life and practice? You alluded to one that you got stuck in and you had to change and add a different dimension. What are the other kinds of tools and practices you've used and still use in your daily practice?
I just realized that even mindfulness is impermanent. I thought, wow. Oh my gosh, I spend all my life following this. I try to get a good concentration, everything perfect. And then suddenly I realized that even the thing that I'm following is not permanent. And I feel, wow. What other tool for me? I use all my tools, and suddenly you find out something new, and then you find, wow, you really lost. That's true. But it's okay. It's okay to be lost. Because that means you go one more step. That means one more door opens. You know, don't feel bad like, oh, I'm lost. You never know. You lost, but then you will find another good beach. Beautiful beach, right? Wow, I never thought of this. I don't turn this way, and I never see that beach. Beautiful one. So don't feel bad about getting lost. Don't feel scared about that, because that will open up another new horizon, new thing for you. And that's why I feel, wow. Wow, I need to work some more, because I just realized that this opened up some new thing for me. So I need to practice some more and look into this. And I have different kind of tools, but now most of them no use. When you look at this, oh no. Right? Everything, it just keep moving around, keep changing, and if you hang on to any of those things, you're not gonna feel happy. You're not gonna feel happy ever, because it's gonna leave you. No matter how much you wanna keep it, right? That's rather you enjoy it now. You live with it now. And then maybe another life, or maybe later you see it again or something, we don't know. So that's why, to the conclusions, the Eichmann and Vietnamese Zen master, he got a poem. I don't know if I translated correctly in English. He said that everything in our lives dependent on conditions. So if you want to enjoy your life, you need to live with that. Go with the flow. That's the key. Go with the flow, because condition, when it's come together, it become this. When condition no longer there, it's going to disappear. The same thing happened to us. We here because of all conditions together. And then sometime later, when all conditions no longer there, we gone. And then the other time, when condition come together, we reappear again. Maybe not we, the same person, but something else. We don't know. So right now, we here, we need to enjoy it. We need to have, look at our life and saying, I'm here, I don't know about 5 seconds of ten minutes after this. I have no idea. I just want to enjoy what I have now, as much as I can. That's all I can do. And that's all in your hand. You can do that. That's the tool I use, including, you know, even I just find out that there's some new way for me to to pursue. But I'm okay with it. I'll feel okay. Let's go it again. Try it again. And that's how we enjoy our life practice. I mean, that's life is all about. It's keep moving, never nonstop. Yeah. So right now we just gradually try to understand and try to absorb as much as we can what we learned from Buddha, so we can turn our life much better, less suffering, and more happiness. That's the key. Just go for the happiness. Yeah, just that's the fourth noble truth is about the path leading to the well-being. That's the one. That's the one we're going for, and we just try to do that. So, thank you for listening to my talk, and hopefully, maybe we all will be well and peacefulness. Thank you.